Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are continuing our conversation with Don Rose, who is press secretary to Martin Luther King Jr. in his 1966 Chicago Freedom Campaign. A big part of this, and probably why this gets attention in today when people talk about it, is King had a pretty rough reception during a march in Marquette Park. Can you talk about how he came to march? And for people who may not know, that was a largely white neighborhood. How did he come to be there?
Well, one of the things we were working on in the campaign was on a broad-based campaign that included employment and health care and education and so on, was the concept of open housing. And we had an open housing effort where we had people testing the real estate practices in white communities that would be at least a mile outside of the ghetto lines of the day. And a black couple would go in and test, ask for housing, and they would be shown only to the black area. Then a white couple would come in, and they would be shown something only in the white area, and then the black couple would come back, and so on. And these practices were theoretically to be condemned by the Chicago Human Rights Organization, which was pretty inert. Anyway, we found this one just outside the Marquette Park area that had flunked all the tests, and the city had not moved against them. And we held a vigil of people about, I would say, 50 or 60 people, a mixed crowd, say three quarters black, one quarter white, approximately. And white crowd gathered around there. And as the day wore on and night started to fall, it was looking pretty raucous. And the police were doing nothing to disperse that crowd. And so they offered Jesse Jackson, who happened to be in charge of that particular vigil, to take them back to their headquarters in the paddy wagons rather than disperse the white crowds. Now, Jesse accepted that, and when we came back, Al Raby and Dr. King were quite angered by that, and we discussed how best to deal with the problem, and we decided to march back to that real estate office, which would take us from the black area through the white area. And the first march we tried, we were met by a hail of bricks and bottles and a hate-filled crowd, and got to Marquette Park, and cars were burned and so on. It was a very bitter and dramatic event, and the police did nothing to stop this. They acted as if we were the wrongdoers rather than the angry crowds. When we came back again after one or two marches, Dr. King joined us trying to go through Marquette Park again. And that's when, in a famous episode, he was hit by a brick. And he was stunned. He fell to the ground. Fortunately, he was not seriously injured. But
I actually have a clip of him talking about that from, I think it seems from the footage that it was just moments after it happened. Let's take a listen to that.
Oh, I've been hit so many times, I'm immune to it.
How do you feel about this reception, sir?
Well, this is a terrible thing. I've been in many demonstrations all across the South. But I can say that I have never seen, even in Mississippi and Alabama, mobs as hostile and as hate-filled as I've seen in Chicago.
But the march will go on anyway?
Oh, very definitely. we can't stop the march. We've been going on in a few minutes.
You feel you're in a closed society, Dr. King, here in the southwest side of Chicago?
Oh, yes. It's definitely a closed society, and we're going to make it an open society.
Just line up a little bit.
And we feel that we have to do it this way in order to bring the evil out into the open so that this community will be forced to deal with it.
So what happens next after this? He's hit by this brick. You say he gets back up. He was just stunned, and there's no open wound, I gather.
Yeah, right. And we went on, and we held a full vigil at that real estate agency. And then we started marches into similar communities. I think we had about, perhaps as many as 15 marches before the city filed a suit to stop the marches, and we wound up in what was called the summit conference with the city, the state, the county, and the private real estate industry, and so on, where it was attempted to do something about open housing, and they did not do very much at that time. They formed an organization that would eventually start moving some people into suburban housing and a little bit of integration, but not really a great deal. And the summit conference, which was looked upon as in the long run as Mayor Daley staving off Martin Luther King, but the ultimate result in 1968, shortly after King's death, we passed the National Open Housing Law. Now, granted, it doesn't have a lot of teeth, but it was comparable in some ways to previous laws that Dr. King had helped pass, such as, you know, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. This was a lesser mark, but it was certainly a significant mark after his death.
Earlier in our program, we broadcast an interview with Ambassador and former Illinois U.S. Senator Carol Moseley Braun, and she talked about how that particular moment of the brick in 1966 was so important in her own sort of the way she thought about her work in politics later and at the time even of you know, that responding calmly to aggression. And that's certainly the image, you know, we have of King today from newsreel clips. What was he like in person? What was it like? I mean, did being around him, you know, match his image as it was presented as we know it today from black and white footage?
Well, in our meetings, I would describe him really as the great listener. He did less talking and orating, but always was listening to what's going on and asking questions. And discussing tactical solutions, such as they would come up. He was a very quiet, cordial, to be sure, but a wonderful listener, and very thoughtfully. You wouldn't think you were talking to Einstein or a genius, except as he was able to synthesize everything he heard into some very concrete measures. It was a wonderful process to be meeting with him, talking about the issue, stating the problem, and watching him cogitate and come up with his final version.
And you talked. It almost sounds like he had a sort of Zen-like calm in some of these moments. And it's interesting. I've seen you describe the reaction of the city of Mayor Daley to King as sort of Buddhist-like, and he was confounded by that, right? He sort of expected something different.
Yeah, Daley never uttered a hostile word, not in our presence, anyway. Who knows what he was said while our backs were turned.
Right.
He was known to shout a few epithets here and there through the years. But Yeah, he had this, I've described it as Buddhistic. You didn't know whether he was saying yes or no. The example I give, if somebody came up to him and would say, Mayor, I'd like to, you know, who's looking for his blessing, would say, I'd like to run for alderman of the 17th Ward. His response would be, oh, the 17th Ward is a good ward to run in. Now, what did he say, yes or no? And King was used to getting the hostility and the reaction, so it was very difficult for him to deal with this. It was like somebody described it as punching a pillow.
Ultimately, what changes, what was the lasting legacy of this campaign in Chicago?
It set off a series of other kinds of campaigns, political campaigns, that broke the black community loose from the grip of the Chicago machine. It was a slow process, but it's the process that finally led to the election of Harold Washington.
King was far more admired in death than he was in his lifetime. The Gallup organization in 1999 found that he was among the most admired people by Americans, second only to Mother Teresa, for the whole 20th century. But back in 1966, a Gallup survey found he had a 63% negative rating. 63% negative. What do you think changed, and what did that feel like working with him at that time?
Well, it was he was dangerous to the establishment. He was working, trying to desegregate America, trying to change the economic plight of African-American people. Latinos had not at that time emerged as a special protected group at that time, but it was moving in that direction. And he opposed the war in Vietnam. He was, the eyes of much of the establishment and ordinary people, you know, a dangerous radical. And looking back, some of his more radical ideas have not been promulgated, and they do remember that he was trying to do the right thing. And, of course, in death, he is less dangerous. If he were alive, he would still have many antagonists, I believe, today.
And is there a lesson in the way we think about today's activists who are trying to push for change?
No, I mean, they inherited something from him, and they had to move on as progress went. We learned that... for example, the schools never got desegregated. They only became more segregated to the point that, our schools, which in 1963, the Chicago school system was 50-50 black and white, and now it's virtually 90% more than 90% black and Hispanic. So there are still the same kinds of issues to be fought, and we use... similar tools, but as the goalposts are moved, sometimes the tactics are moved.
Don Rose is a writer and political consultant in Chicago. He was press secretary to Dr. Martin Luther King in 1966 during the Chicago Freedom Campaign. Don Rose, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for the invitation.
That's all we have time for on this Martin Luther King Day. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're scheduled to talk with Illinois Senate Majority Leader Kim Lightford about the legislative agenda this year and her recent experience as a victim of carjacking. Later this week, we'll have another show taking your questions on the latest with COVID-19, and we'll bring you that conversation we had to postpone last week on the Generation X exhibit being planned at the Illinois State Museum. You can let us know what you thought about today's show by emailing us. Our address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org, or you can find us on Twitter @21stshow. I am @BrianMackey, and our show is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.